AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today. Sven Sundgaard joins us in his usual 5:30 spot. We'll talk weather and some interesting, because really interesting weather as things have started to change, getting cooler again. We'll get into that with him in the 5 o'clock hour. But right now, if you like it old school, let me kick it for you. God, that's the whitest intro ever. Aaron Rupar used to, many years ago, write for City Pages, and we had him on the air when we were lucky enough with Roops with the Scoops. Of course, he has gone on to be one of the most followed journalists in the United States. He was, of course, working for Vox. He's now actually started a brand new project. He's kind enough today to join us to talk about that, as well as some of the news he's been covering. Aaron Rupar. Hey, Rupar.
Hey, Matt. Great to be back with you. I think it's been probably 6 or 7 years.
Well, we talked about 2 or 3 years ago, I think, right before, right before 2020, before the election, before the pandemic and everything blew up. But I think we talked then about the election. But yeah, it's amazing. You have just, your career has been great. You were recently writing for Vox and just fantastic articles that you were putting out over there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, well, and I hope if people liked what I was doing at Vox that they'll check out my new project. It's called Public Notice. You can find it at aaronrupar.substack.com. I'm covering a lot of the same sorts of things, the Republican Party media, right-wing media in particular, and doing explanatory journalism and accountability journalism. So if you've liked my work at Vox or at Think Progress before that or even at City Pages, I think that you'll like what I'm up to now. So please check it out if you haven't.
I do have to start with something that I adore, and that is your videos you post of your daughter. Are just delightful. They are so cute. And what it reminded for me is my kids, they're gone past the cute stage now. They're 20, 17, and 14. And it's such a wonderful reminder of how great being a dad at that age was. Oh, I just love those videos. Thanks for sharing those.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. And, you know, I never really planned to post so much baby content. But I think part of it was just, you know, Mia was born right during the pandemic, and I think for a lot of people, you know, they kind of live vicariously through the videos and photos that I've posted, and so I really appreciate that people, it makes me feel good when, you know, that people appreciate it, and hopefully someday Mia will too.
Well, and it's very understandable that you know Mia is a wonderful, you know, refresher after, like you say, you dive deep into a lot of Republican, not only the politicians, but the coverage from the right-wing news, whether that's a Trump rally, whether that's Fox News. And my God, I mean, that just, it's got to be, you got to want to take a shower half the time.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, it's, you know, this has kind of been my beat now going back 7, 8 years, you know, even when I was covering the Minnesota Republican Party at City Pages. So I'm kind of used to it, you know, kind of comes with the territory of covering U.S. politics these days. But yeah, it is kind of a nice, you know, it's good that I can have that sort of wall up between my personal life and my professional life and kind of enjoy being a dad. And then during the day or even in the evening, sometimes kind of throw myself into, you know, what Trump is up to or what Mitch McConnell is up to. So yeah, I think it kind of helps to have balance in that way. But I'm a little bit numb to just the, you know, the Republican shenanigans because I've been immersed in them now for so long.
Aaron Rupar joining us right now. Public Notice is his latest project that he's working on. You have been following them. You watched, you actually wrote a nice article here on his rally down in Iowa. Talk a little bit about the Trump rallies and how they've changed since he's left office, because one of the things that you brought up in your article was the crowd seeming to be at times very disinterested, which was very similar to when he did his rally in 2019 here in town. I mean, there was large swaths of his rally where the people in the audience clearly were bored out of their mind.
Yeah, you know, a lot of his material hasn't changed, but one thing that has that I think is notable is that he has an entire part of his speech now devoted to the big lie and ticking through examples of purported fraud, you know, whether it pertains to voting machines changing votes, which they actually, you know, didn't do, or, you know, people stuffing ballots, things like that. And, you know, he devotes 15, 20 minutes to these anecdotes, and people, especially with the rally that just took place down in Iowa, seemed very, very bored by this. And, you know, were kind of silent. And, you know, whenever you're giving a speech that is 90 minutes to 2 hours long, you know, they're going to be kind of down moments, but it really did kind of stick out to me that that part of his material, you know, sort of this new stuff that he's only been talking about since the election, really doesn't go over well with his audience. And so, you know, that's kind of the new stuff. As I also get into in the piece, I mean, there's a lot of the same old in terms of race baiting, you know, saying that Haitian migrants are spreading AIDS into the country, which is kind of a callback to what he said about Mexican immigrants back in 2015 and 16. And, you know, so that much of it is kind of the same. And it's not, you know, it's still, I think, extremely notable, even if it's not new. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's part of the, what I get into in the piece as well, is just the broader challenge of covering Trump at this point and trying not to give oxygen to his misinformation and lies while also being cognizant of the fact that he is the leader of the Republican Party. He is the presumptive Republican nominee for president in 2024. And so I think he does have to be covered. You have to do it responsibly. And I view that as being kind of part of my project, you know, is providing that responsible coverage, watching so people don't have to, and sort of unpacking the stuff that's notable. But Matt, as you mentioned, you know, the material pertaining to the big lie to trying to convince people that the election was stolen from him really doesn't go over well. And so I don't know if that's more about his delivery itself and that, you know, kind of picking through all of these specific examples is just kind of boring, or if that sort of speaks to, you know, people kind of tuning that part of it out. You know, I will say that there were chants of Trump won during the rally. You know, you saw a lot of people with flags and shirts saying Trump won. And so I do think that, you know, that's become a big part of his political identity. And I do think, you know, even I'm not sure people actually believe that he won or not, but, you know, that sort of belief is kind of a form of aggression in its own right. This idea that, yeah, you know, Trump won, even if you don't necessarily believe that. But I do think it says something that, you know, at these rallies, when he gets into that, you know, it doesn't really meet with the same sort of response as he gets when he talks about Hillary Clinton or Ilhan Omar. Or, you know, kind of these tropes that have been a part of his shtick now for 5 or 6 years.
You brought up the racism thing. I have noticed since he has been out of office, and when you bring up the stuff he talked about, the racist comments he made about Mexicans, that was pre-office. While he was in office, he seemed to, at, you know, minimally be somewhat restrained. And now that he's not, he basically lets the racism fly. I mean, he's not trying to hide it anymore. I mean, it reminds me of, you know, when the Dixiecrats left and became the Republicans, and the rallies the Republicans were having in the South, they weren't hiding what they were saying as they said it.
Yeah, I mean, I would push back a little bit on the idea that he wasn't doing that stuff when he was in office. You know, I think the rally that you mentioned earlier in Minneapolis in 2019, I remember that was the one infamously where people were chanting "Send her back" about Ilhan Omar, and so obviously that's quite racist. And so I don't know if he ever really toned it down. Of course, there was a whole countries thing. That was an off-the-record comment, but I think the stuff has always kind of been, you know, just below the surface, and at times he's kind of, you know, with like the Muslim ban, for instance, he tried to sort of repackage that as a travel ban targeting, you know, countries where that had a history of terrorism. You know, he tried to sort of package it in a more anodyne manner than, you know, than what was really going on, which was basically racism. But, you know, certainly the stuff with the Haitian migrants that I mentioned really kind of called back to me a lot of the stuff that he was saying about Mexican immigrants in his first campaign. And, you know, then he was also getting into Afghan refugees and sort of suggesting that, you know, at least one of these refugees, if not a group of them, will commit some sort of act of terrorism in the country before too long. And so, you know, that's kind of always been Trumpism, is that sort of race baiting, that fear mongering. And he's not changing in that respect. And so, again, that just gets into the importance of kind of separating the signal from the noise, not giving oxygen to those comments, but, you know, calling them out for what they are. And explaining to people why it matters that the head of the Republican Party is saying things like that.
Well, and you know what? You're exactly right, because you know what it is that he doesn't have the team of apologists now. He doesn't have the team of people coming out saying, when he said both sides, good people on both sides, let me explain what that meant. You know, he doesn't have that. And because of that, you know, it dangles out there by itself. And so it does feel like it's worse. But you're right. It's basically the same thing without basically the you know, division of the federal government running cover for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he still does have a lot of apologists. You know, I watch enough Newsmax and Fox News to see that on a daily basis. But I think it's more that people have just kind of become numb to this stuff. You know, I mean, the first time that Trump called Mexicans rapists and criminals, it was pretty shocking. And now, you know, we're 6 years later, more than 6 years later, and I think people just kind of expect that. But, you know, I think there's kind of a danger in that numbing, you know, that people just kind of accept that as normal coming from a presumptive presidential nominee, a guy who, you know, when he makes his campaign official, will clear the field. And so, you know, I think that, again, there's that distinction between something being newsworthy and something being notable. I think a lot of the stuff isn't really newsworthy in the sense that it's not new, but it's still highly notable. And so I think that's kind of a key distinction for trying to cover Trump these days in a responsible manner.
You bring up as well in this article Chuck Grassley and the conundrum for Republicans. I mean, yesterday Trump made the comment that if you basically don't back me publicly on this voter thing and you know, defend me and basically saying defend the January 6th decisions, that, you know, I'll tell all the voters to stay home in 2022 and 2024. You do have his lackeys that are basically willing to champion him, carry his torch for him. Grassley is interesting because your quote here, this is Grassley speaking. If I didn't accept the endorsement of a person that got 91% of the Republican voters in Iowa, I wouldn't be too smart, Grassley said. Not exactly a ringing endorsement of Trump, basically just stating the obvious and realizing the situation that he's in. But as we had yesterday, Jeff Stein, one of our national guys on talking about that, he said, you notice there's no endorsement from Grassley, back to Trump. There's nothing back at him saying, oh, yeah, and I back him for 2024. No, it basically says this and kind of accepts it. It is an interesting place to be, especially for the established, you know, kind of traditional Republicans, moderate Republicans who don't want to seem like they're, you know, moving away from the party. But, yeah, at the same time, they don't want to. They know that embracing Trump to a point doesn't help them too much in some of their races.
Yeah, I thought that was really significant, too. It was a moment where Trump called Grassley on stage. Grassley said just a few words, and the words that he said were basically the quote that you read, which was, you know, kind of a very cynical, if I didn't accept this guy's endorsement, I would be a fool kind of thing. But the other thing that I thought was notable that I discussed briefly in the piece, too, is that Grassley was one of the Republicans after January 6th who, you know, kind of denounced the insurrection and tried to put a little distance between himself and Trump. And, you know, during this rally just before it in Iowa last weekend, he was on Newsmax basically trying to reframe January 6th as Trump being a victim. And, you know, Grassley's theory of the case is that there are other administration officials who are pushing to try to overturn the election. And because Trump never really acted on some of the more extreme guidance, you know, like the Eastman memo, which, you know, may have ended up being not executed more because of Mike Pence than anything Trump did. But, you know, Grassley's theory is that Trump was actually a force kind of trying to stop the coup from happening. Of course, you know, that kind of flies in the face of the audio we've all heard of Trump telling officials in Georgia to find votes for him and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's a pretty galling effort to rewrite history. But I think that difference between some of the things that Grassley said right after January 6th, trying to put distance between himself and Trump, and what he said on Newsmax, I think kind of encapsulates what we've seen from the Republican Party this year, which, you know, was a little bit of squeamishness about Trump, you know, when Biden took office and then into the impeachment trial. But, you know, I think as Republicans have realized that the base has stuck with Trump and that if they distance themselves from Trump or denounced him, that they would be opening themselves up to a primary challenge, I think they've basically fallen back in line. And I think Grassley's comments at that rally sort of it captured that nicely.
Yeah, and Grassley said the other day, he's like, oh, sure, he was talking about a coup, but he never really followed through with his plans. I was like, what are you talking about? My God. And it does, and that's also an interesting dynamic for Republicans because independents have definitely moved away from Trump. Even some moderate Republicans, Trump's numbers are gotten quite a bit lower since Biden took office. So the question is, you know, are they going to be able to take, you know, an old dog and be able to rebrand him and be able to get people to vote for him? And the reality is I think it's going to be incredibly hard to sell Trump or your Trump loyalty in 2022 or Trump himself in 2024.
Yeah, I go back and forth on that because, you know, I was feeling really good about the Biden presidency 3-4 months ago. You know, I think sometimes I kind of have a hard time separating what I immerse myself in every day watching right-wing media and kind of what normal people are talking about. But, you know, certainly if you watch a lot of Fox News these days, you would think that the country is basically disintegrating between inflation and, you know, these school board meetings with parents screaming at school board officials and the border crisis and all this stuff. And so, you know, obviously there's been a little bit of an erosion. You know, there's polling now that shows that Biden's approval is back up, you know, around 50%. But for a while there, it was in the low 40s. And so, that's kind of my concern is that if it ends up being a good year for Republicans next year, if they retake the House, if they retake the Senate, Trump is definitely going to try and give himself credit for that. And that was another thing that I thought was notable from the rally in Iowa was the fact that there were so many establishment figures there with Trump. You know, there was Grassley, there were two members of Congress, there was Governor Kim Reynolds.
Yeah.
So what that kind of symbolized to me is how united the party is at this point behind Trump and how, he still is the figurehead, the leader of the party. And so I think that you're right to kind of point to some metrics that have shown some erosion in Trump support among Republicans, but I'm still concerned that if it's a good year for Republicans next year, that he'll use that as leverage to springboard into his 2024 campaign. And, if things aren't going well economically or, if there's another surge of COVID cases, things like that, that we're polarized enough where I think, last year's election was close enough where I certainly would not say that it's beyond the realm of possibility that Trump could win, especially when you factor in some of the voting laws that we've seen, voting restriction laws that we've seen in states like Georgia and Arizona. I certainly would not discount the possibility that Trump could win in 2024.
I think a lot of it comes down to the 1-6 commission, because if Trump is as dumb as I think the guy is, he's probably got paperwork there saying, here's how the coup's going to play out. And if stuff like that starts coming out through their investigative process, it's going to be pretty darn hard for anyone but even the most steadfast Trump fans to stay on board with him. That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you there, but I think that, we've seen with a lot of these investigations of Trump that I don't think by any means he's like a brilliant person, but he seems kind of cagey enough to avoid, incriminating himself to that extent. I mean, I will say, obviously, with the first impeachment, he released the transcript of his phone call with the Ukrainian president, which was pretty darn incriminating. And so, maybe I'm giving him a little bit too much credit, but I also kind of have this sense at this point that I think progressives have been kind of waiting around for 5 or 6 years, whether it was Mueller or whether it's the New York prosecutors. There's been all of these, all of these investigators or prosecutors that people have been kind of, or whether it's Trump's health, there's always kind of a something on the horizon that will undo Trump. And it just seems like it never really comes to fruition. And so I sort of have my doubts that, he's going to end up being kind of disqualified from running by either being indicted or, some sort of documentation that is just so bad for him that politically it's devastating. I still kind of have the assumption, and I could end up being wrong, that if he wants to run again, he'll run and he'll I think that despite some of the numbers showing that his support has eroded among Republicans, I still think he's the most popular Republican nationally. I don't really see another challenger being able to undermine that. And so my assumption is that if he wants to run, he will end up being the Republican nominee.
He sure did kneecap DeSantis. AaronRupar.substack.com. AaronRupar.substack.com. I'll make sure I link to this. It's public notice. It's Aaron Rupar's latest venture here. If you want great journalism, you will find it with Aaron Rupar. Aaron, first of all, I want to make sure I say happy birthday to you next week, my friend. And
thank you.
And also to Mia, give her a big smooch for me. She's such an adorable kid. Thank you very much for sharing those videos.
Yeah, right? I will once I get over this cold. I don't want to spread it too widely. But no, it's great to be on your show again, and let's not make it 2 or 3 years this time.
Absolutely. Roops with the Scoops, Aaron Rupar. Public notice, AaronRupar.substack.com. Thanks, Aaron. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great.
Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.